You are very inappropriate.
I like being inappropriate.
Broad's cast is entertaining.
Come on, if I can't mess with you, this is not going to be fun.
Broad's cast is thought-provoking.
That is a riveting revelation, Ms. Goldman.
Broad's cast is unexpected.
Who do you like better, the person that people think you are or the actual you?
Oh, God.
Because they're nothing alike.
Broad topics, broad minds, broad hosts, but not just for broads.
We are man-friendly. I hope to be.
I am man-friendly. I can't say the same about Kim. Wait, that sounded bad.
This is Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon if you're on the East Coast.
Oh, I forgot. We're bi-coastal. Woo-hoo!
We've always been bi-coastal, Kim.
By something. I don't know.
But, you know, listening to that open of the show, I realize I get so frustrated with Siri. You know, Siri on my iPhone.
Yeah, who follows both of us on Twitter.
Yes, I love her. No, actually, I don't really love her because she never understands a word I say. And I feel like I'm really well-spoken. But she, I'll say, please, you know, I don't know, look, yeah. Search the web for what time does Target open? And she's like, you want to eat a muffin over an elephant? I mean, it's just, she just doesn't.
How does that connect to the opening of our show?
Because in the opening of our show, I'm all like, you know, so I'm like, oh, okay, maybe it is.
Well, maybe we're just not as articulate as we thought. So maybe this whole broadcast thing is like, it's all a figment of our imagination.
It makes us relatable.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's been a while, Kim.
Yeah,
what have you been up to? What's up? What you been doing?
My gosh, nothing. I feel like I've been doing nothing.
Oh, come on.
Well, I mean, I haven't been taking big trips. I haven't been sailing the wide sea.
You haven't sailed the seven seas?
I have not sailed the seven seas. I'm not. My girlfriend, I was just going to say I've not climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, but my girlfriend is doing that right now.
Really?
Yeah.
On purpose?
My girlfriend, just a little shout out to my friend Jana. She and her twin sister are climbing Mount Kilimanjaro to raise awareness for multiple myeloma.
Oh, wow.
My mom has been diagnosed and been suffering from that for years. And so they raised more than $20,000 and they're with a group of 15 people and they are en route to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. I think that's pretty awesome.
That's fantastic.
Right? Yeah. So I'm not doing that.
Right.
I'm just sitting here bragging
but
about
you're
her.
Supporting.
Yeah.
That's great, though. I mean, you know, I love when people take, I mean, we talk about this all the time, when people take very difficult circumstances in life and they do something so important, you know. So we have to address the elephant in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
The audio in the room.
Yeah. So we're
our up, studio.
Yes. We're under construction.
We're under construction, which
that's a euphemism for a lot of things.
Under construction. We are building a whole new studio.
Yeah.
Which is so exciting. We're like Oprah in the making, except someone you like.
Mm-hmm. And so we're just tweaking and we're a little behind schedule on some of the things that we had wanted to complete, but we didn't want to not do the show today. So it might sound a little muffled. It may sound like we're a little far away, but we're really right here.
We're right here.
Yes. In your mind.
And if you're listening in one of our several stations around the country, or you could be on Spreaker right now, go over to the chat and let us know you're there and ask us some questions. We'll answer anything.
Oh.
Wouldn't we?
Sure.
You wouldn't answer anything?
Almost.
Almost.
Mm-hmm.
What wouldn't you answer? I'll ask you.
Last time it was that I had sex?
Oh.
Oh, actually, that's not a secret.
Do you even know the answer?
I do. Mm-hmm.
So I, over the past, I'm just going to tell you anyway, even though you didn't ask, Christmas, we haven't even done a show since the holidays.
No.
And since that I've moved and I've gone to Boston to see my dad with Alzheimer's. And I've moved. Did I mention that?
Yeah, so, you moved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my house is filled with boxes. So if anyone wants to come over and help me unpack.
Or steal. Just you could probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny when you, I don't know about anybody else, but when you start a move, like a big move with your whole family, you want to, you know, streamline things. You want to sift through the stuff you don't need. And, you know, and so we started that way. And I was so effective at it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, the movers are showing up in a few minutes. And you've only done that like one or two rooms that way.
Right.
And they come in and they have no patience and they just start dumping things in boxes. So I am now unpacking things that I never wanted, you know, never mind paid for to have them moved.
Yeah.
I need organizational help.
Well, that's a good news because we have someone that will be joining us in the next couple of weeks that will be helping us the beginning of the year to help purge and help us organize not only our homes and our lives, but our hearts and our minds. And so I think that maybe she was like, well, she's my gift to you. You didn't know it. She's my belated Christmas housewarming Happy New Year gift.
Excellent. So, mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. And later on in the show, in this show, we're going to talk to Jared Hill, who is podcaster and also designing. He's a fabulous interior designer and on-air talent, and he is actually designing our studio, which is exciting. So we're going to be on YouTube and all that good stuff, and like we'll be looking all fly.
Yeah, so I'm a little resistant to that because now that means I have to brush my hair, and if anyone has ever listened to our show in the past, we know that the we part of me resists the having to put makeup on and brush my hair. When I signed on to this podcast, I was like just thinking it was radio. Now you're telling me I have to look pretty.
Listen, I'm all about the audience and what the audience wants.
And yes, and the feedback
they want
has
all
been...
of us.
Yeah.
So, which is sad because this really has been our tagline for so long. Take a listen.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougall, two broads with faces made for radio.
Sadly, our faces are still made for radio.
Yeah, but now you're forcing me to, like, you know.
Step it up, girl.
Yeah.
Step it up.
Yeah,
so.
But,
Anyway, so politics, we don't really get into politics per se, but sometimes you have to. It's
unavoidable because we've been inundated with this Republican committee and nominations and Democratic debates for the last, feels like, eternity,
right?
And we have like another year of it, right?
Oh, well, November, so not such a year.
No, but then when they get nominated, then we have a whole. They don't get.
No. They get nominated in the elections in November
of 2016.
Yes.
Oh, it is. Oh, I mean, I'm saying I'm like I've been in the vortex
you're not,
of
but
politics.
But you're not alone because we asked on our Facebook page how interested people are, and you know, A was like yes, you know, wicked interested, and B was like meh. And C was not so much,
well,
not at all.
Well, I'm interested right now because I don't have any say, really, in who gets nominated for the ticket. I mean, I'm going to pay attention when the 20 or so nominees from the Republican Party get whittled down.
Right.
And I'll start paying attention. But all this nonsense for the last 10 months or whatever it's been has been...
It's like, I feel like they're going from most popular at school or homecoming king and queen. But, you know, one of our taglines and one of our most important messages is that Broadcast is a place where every woman's voice matters.
Except one.
Well, no. Well, except unless your last name is Kardashian or Jenner. But there are, you know, it's very difficult sometimes when you just hear a person and you don't agree with anything they have to say. Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you going to...
So let's just start with this. Ready? Oh, wait, we have to do this a little.
Go kick ISIS ass!
Yeah. That's Sarah Palin endorsing Donald Trump.
This past week, and for those of you that may not have seen the cover of the New York Daily News this week, it was hilarious. It was two of them side by side, and it says, I'm stupid.
Yeah. Like those t-shirts?
Yeah. No, that's very funny. But, you know, I was reading in an article, I forget where it was, online yesterday, and they said that, you know, despite how you may feel about Sarah Palin, it was actually a very smart move because she has a lot of supporters.
She really does.
And so bringing those supporters to Donald Trump versus Rubio or Cruz is probably a very, very smart move on her behalf and Trump's behalf, who needs to solidify his votes in Iowa. And I don't know. I mean, if you're already supporting Donald Trump, then I guess it's no surprise that Sarah Palin is going to be, you know, supporting him. And they've always actually been supportive of each other in the last couple of years. And with different, when she ran, he supported her, he endorsed her. And I think when they were going after Obama and wanting him to turn over his birth certificate all those years back, they got on each other's bandwagon. So I'm not really surprised that she's in his corner, but my God, I can't listen to the two of them.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I just don't understand, you know, this whole let's push, you know, family values and this and that. And like, listen, I have family values, but I also don't sit up on a pedestal knowing I make mistakes all the time and my family's not perfect, you know, but she stands there like this holier than thou person whose daughter is having her, you know, second baby, unwed daughter with two different guys, and her son was just arrested for domestic violence,
right,
which she actually blamed on Obama.
Well, you know what? Sort if you read beyond the headlines, because I did too, I'm like, what? How should, but you know, I mean, she's relating it to PTSD and how Obama doesn't really care for our veterans and if they would have given her son more support. But she's also who she is, and how the fact that she couldn't get her kid more support if he was suffering from PTSD is ridiculous to me. Like,
right.
how is Sarah Palin is with all
she's
her
not
clout.
Wrong as far as yeah. the way we treat our veterans and what we need to do. However, yeah. she should have resources. She's his mother.
Yeah. But I
step up, mom.
But you know, but to that regard though, she speaks for a lot of people. I think that's why people are kind of drawn to Trump, because he's not politically savvy. He's not politically correct. He says what a lot of people may think
right.
and are unwilling to say, because I've heard some things that he said and he's way off the mark in a lot. There's a couple of times I'm like, oh, he kind of has a point.
Well, he's a great businessman, clearly.
Yeah. And I think that's what people actually are liking.
Right.
When you can get past some of the buffoonerism.
Buffoonerism.
Because there was a link, and I'll have to put it back up on our broadcast page. And I don't even know where it was, but there was some parliamentary hearing or something in some country, and they were like, they don't want Trump in their country, and they were calling him all of these hilarious names.
Oh.
Did I post that? Oh my gosh, it was so funny. But anyway, I think once you get past some of his BS, I think people actually enjoy the fact that he's off the cuff. He says things that a politician wouldn't normally say. And
right.
she's very much the same way. And unfortunately, people were not accustomed to that. We tend to gravitate towards the politician because that's all
right.
we've ever been given.
And I love that idea. I love somebody who comes from private sector, who's able to cut through that BS. However, you know, I do not want my future president getting into Twitter wars with Chrissy Teigen and calling right. Rosie O'Donnell a pig. Like, he's not the right person to represent our country.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that there needs to be a little bit of polish and a little bit of tact. I mean, when he talks about, like, you know, stupid guys, like, that sounds to me like a mafioso kind of approach.
Right.
He doesn't really, you know, I mean, I don't even like when grown men talk about girls. Like, you know, they're dating girls, like women, use the term women. Like, if
right.
he wants to say if Trump wants to talk about guys, I'd rather him say, you know, we have, you know, illiterate men. I mean, you get
right.
your point across, but when you say stupid guys, like you just,
right.
I'm done listening now. Like,
yeah.
I just, you sound like your schoolboy. And I don't know, but I think that he needs to, in some ways, be a little bit more polished in order for people to take him more seriously with some of the things that he says. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I think that, you know, he's just so quick to fly off the handle, and he never has accountability. That's the other thing too. There's never accountability. If he gets into an argument or a debate or something, it's always that other person. Like he's never wrong.
Well, he also talks kind of
vague. It sounds very American, actually.
Yeah, but he also kind of talks vague, you know, when he says, well, you know, we got to just bring the wall, you know, we got to put up walls, you know, to keep the Mexicans out. Like, you know, or like, that's what he says. But then
yeah.
there's no like, there's no plan, Ben. There's no
right.
like 10-step plan
right.
as to why or how. It's just, it's sort of floated out there. It's not really thorough. Now, maybe he has a plan, but the way he presents it is just kind of haphazard to me. And he's always talking about himself. It's always like, can
yeah.
you believe the big crowd I've got here today?
Yeah.
And I'm so popular
yes.
and I can't, and I'm so tired of that ego.
Yeah. I don't even want to be at a party with that guy. Never mind have him represent us.
Yeah.
But
it's embarrassing. But anyway, but then you've got Palin who has that same, that's, I mean, people made fun of her for the way she speaks. I mean, even listening to her say her comment.
Oh, I'm sorry, but that's a great, okay.
Go kick ISIS ass!
Now, if she were at a football game, you
yeah.
know, great.
Yeah.
But she acts like, you know, like they're going to go beat another team.
Yeah.
You know, it takes no effort at all. We're just going to
yeah.
do that.
I don't know.
Yeah, but we're going to have Jared Hill
Does Jared have something to say about this?
Let's take a very, very quick break and find out.
You're listening to Broadscast with Kim Goldman and Jackie McDougal. They're huge in anywhere other than somewhere that you've been before.
We are back. So you need to put your little headset on.
I know, that was,
which is craziness.
So we're just talking. We're waiting for Jared to get on the line. But do we have Jared on the line? No, we do not.
Jared.
Let's see. So in the meantime,
Jared,
you're not voting for Trump, huh?
No, and you know, when it comes to politics, I'm not. I think I'm a registered Democrat still, but I tend to just vote based on who and what that person represents, depending, regardless of what party they're from.
Right, right. Well, we have Jared on the line. Hello, Jared.
Jared's on the line.
That sounded very Beethoven-esque.
Well, thank you. I'm going to receive that as a compliment.
Good morning.
How are you, Mr. Podcaster, interior designer, on-camera talent?
That's a really big resume. I've got to get new business cards.
Right?
And, and make sure you add friend of broadcast, because
exactly.
You've been on our show umpteen times.
I know.
Always appreciate you coming in at the last minute and helping us out. So thank you and welcome back.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey,
go ahead.
Before we get into crazy topics, tell everybody about your podcast.
My podcast is called Back to Reality, and we talk about pop culture and politics. I always like saying my personality is right at the intersection of pop culture and politics. So we can talk about Kim Kardashian, or we could talk about Ivanka Trump on the campaign trail, or we could talk about, you know, Bernie Sanders, or, you know, whatever it is. So
Right. We
always have a good time talking about the things that are going on out in the world. And recently we've started doing what I'm calling follow-ups, which are like sit-down interviews. One-on-ones with interesting people. So I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Is my invite in the mail? Because I seem to have...
Yeah. Of course it is. Your publicist is a nightmare. I'm just going to be honest. So
no.
I've been going back and forth. But yes, we are working on it for sure.
That's funny. Are you typing?
No, I'm sitting at my computer, though. I've been writing notes, listening to you guys. I heard Kim say, "Does Jared have something to say about this?" And I was like... Does Jared have something to say about this?
Are you feeling the burn this morning? I think that's such a hilarious,
gosh.
Hilarious. But
so do we want to be feeling the burn?
So what's your take? What's your take on what's happening?
Wait,
I feel like
Jared, I think it's time for you to hear this.
Go kick ISIS ass!
Wait, is it go kick ISIS ass?
Yes.
Okay, I want you to play that like every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
First of all, love that soundbite. It is brilliant.
Yeah, and we can't say anything worse than that word. I'm just saying, we're on the radio here, buddy.
I'm so glad you said that, because I'm used to not being limited to what I can say on my show. So
exactly.
Thank you for that.
I was feeling that.
First of all, I love that from Sarah Palin. One of the few things I love from Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin being on the campaign trail for Donald Trump, I think, is so interesting. And it would be worrisome for me if I were Donald Trump or, you know, one of his campaign leads. Because you saw, like, the first day she was out on the trail, she's saying things about Obama that are kind of coming under fire. A couple of things. Number one, Trump talking about girls versus guys and his kind of sexist tone or whatever it is. It's kind of wild to me. I saw him doing an interview on the night of the debate, after the debates were over, there in the spin room, kind of talking to a bunch of reporters, and all of these people are asking him questions, and a woman comes up and asks him a question, a woman from MSNBC, I think it was Callie Hunt, and she asks him a question, and he just kind of like tilts his head and answers the question, and like touches her face. She asked him about, you know, are you tired? How's it been on the campaign trail? And he's like, oh no, I've got a lot of stamina, and kind of like touches her on the face, like, oh, little woman. And it was just like,
wait, he touched her on the face?
He touched her on the face. Like in that subtle way, like a grandmother does to a grandchild, like, oh, child.
Oh.
And it was so
loving and condescending.
Exactly. It was so alarming to me. And like, no one mentioned it. And I was like, this is on TV. Like, did no one see that? Like, are we serious? Like, it
what
was just,
did she do?
Well, they cut away quickly because he was walking away, but she didn't even say anything. And I feel like it's got to be hard to be her in that moment. Like, how do you even address that in a way that's going to be received well? And A, it's Donald Trump. You know, he's, you know, the master of not really apologizing for anything.
I would have done it back to him.
It's just, well, I mean, something. It was
I
just,
would have totally, like, there, yeah. And put his head into my bosom.
I would have licked my hand something. And then matted down his toupee.
Oh, my
we
God.
We have a flyaway, babe.
How we, hilarious
we should
would that
have a contest with our broadcast listeners and see who has the best response to that.
Oh, my goodness. I cringed, and I had to jump on Twitter, and I tweeted her, like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he just did that. It was just alarming to me, but... that between that and I feel like we see so many cutaways to go watch him talk live. And I get frustrated with liberal media and MSNBC in particular, because I feel like that is why he continues to grow. Like we cut away and we go watch him covered live, but then he's not even talking about anything other than like how well he's doing in the polls,
right.
How whack his detractors are, you know, oh, the National Review, it's a horrible paper. It's a horrible paper. Well, they're a horrible paper now because they said something that you didn't like. Whether or not you like him as a candidate is, you know, debatable, but like him as a figure, as a personality is really, really challenging for me to imagine sitting across the table from Vladimir Putin or, you know, with Assad trying to get a deal, done for Syria. So it's hard for me to imagine him, as the person that I want to go represent me.
So what do you think is the attraction to a Donald Trump or a Bernie Sanders, who is also, you know, kind of out there as compared to some of the other candidates? Do you
feel the burn?
Why do you think people are attracted to those kinds of personalities in this regard?
Well, the interesting thing that we've been seeing this week, and, you know, obviously throughout this election, but more so this week, is this idea of the establishment in major air quotes and whatever that actually means. And wanting to go against the establishment. Donald Trump is obviously going against the establishment on the million different ways that he's doing that. It's also interesting that we see Bernie Sanders as anti-establishment because he's been in Congress for 30 years. But everything that he's talking about is going against the big systems that, you know, kind of control everything as far as money and politics and power and all of those things. So voters this year are really, really anti-establishment, it seems. And I think that comes from the way that people have been disgusted with the way the government has just been kind of at a standstill. You know, we've had Congress has had approval rates that were in the single digits for years, single digits or, you know, low teens or something like that for a long time. People are tired of the government not working for them in whatever that way is, whether you be a conservative or a liberal or somewhere, you know, in the middle of that spectrum, just feeling like, you know, government's not getting anything done or, you know, Congress isn't moving. Primarily, people tend to be frustrated with Congress, regardless of how they feel about the president. So right. I think it's more of a response to that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's going to be a long road.
Oh, gosh.
But, you know, I think for me, in general, politics is always so confusing because what they say in the moment sounds really smart or stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you actually are put into that position of power, how much can you really do the things that you've promised or thought about or, you know, your plan suggested? And I think that's where I get so frustrated because I don't understand a lot. And I know that oftentimes we are not always told all the information and we don't have all the facts. And so I feel like I'm just always operating in the dark when it comes to politics.
There's so many advisors and things. There's only so much that one man or woman can do. Let's be honest.
Well, and I also don't always understand the long-term impact of some of these things and how long it takes to implement some of the changes. And so, mm-hmm. you know, how realistic is it to, you know, like how long did it take us to implement Obamacare? And if people are so against it, how long is it going to take to undo that if that's
right.
the goal, you know? And I think that's for me as a kind of a layman when it comes to politics, I get stuck.
Well, I think Barack Obama is a great example of that. Like Barack Obama came in as a change candidate who wanted to come in and change the way that Washington worked and change the way that people feel about government. And he's even said in recent interviews that his major regret was not being able to do that more effectively because Washington has been more gridlocked than ever. And there's plenty of discussion about the reasons that it's been more gridlocked under him than under anyone else. But we use Obama in that example, but then you have to think about Hillary Clinton coming in as a potential president. The Republicans really don't like Barack Obama, but they hate Hillary Clinton. So how is Hillary Clinton going to be effective when she gets into office?
Right.
Should she become president? How is she going to get things done? Or Bernie Sanders, who's even further on the left, but less hated by his colleagues. But then if you think about it from a Republican perspective, if Donald Trump, or even maybe not Ted Cruz as much as Donald Trump, because Ted Cruz doesn't seem to be enjoyed by the Republicans either. but like, you know, Republicans have Congress and then they'd have the executive branch as well. Well, then you have a different situation, right, where they can get things done that they want to get done, which, you know, has a lot to do with abortion and immigration and gay rights and, you know, those kinds of things. So it's about them not working together. President Obama has been criticized a lot because he's not a schmoozer. He's not a person that's going out to dinner and inviting people over to drinks and having chats. He's with his family at the White House. Whereas, you know, a Hillary Clinton would probably be more of a candidate that would be more into schmoozing because she's got that kind of personality. So it'd be interesting to watch how that would be different in the next presidency.
Right. Well, so you're listening to Jared Hill here on Broadcast with Jackie McDougal and Kim Goldman. A little station identification.
Hey.
So, Jared, let's do a huge departure to something far more important. The okay. Oscars.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I feel like the same time last year we were having this exact same conversation.
Indeed.
About Oscars being so white, and here we are again this year with no.
No change.
And what's your take when you heard the award, the nominees being announced, and there was nobody
of color
represented? What did you think? What was your
so opinion? This is really difficult for me every year because, and I haven't even like talked much about it on social media or anything because I'm a big fan of the Oscars. I love the Oscars. I you know, I'm always wanting to be at a party when I watch them. Like, I'm a big fan. However, this is a really big deal. Like, this is not something that we can continue to sweep under the rug and not do anything about. First thing I want to say is I think it's really important to acknowledge that this is not an Oscar-centric problem. This is a Hollywood-focused problem that gets represented at the Oscars, right? Because the Oscars are the biggest night of in Hollywood. So is this a problem at the Oscars? Yes, but it's indicative of a larger problem within the industry. So... I understand being frustrated with the Oscars, and I'm frustrated with the Oscars, and people that are calling for boycotts, I completely understand that. I don't know how I will handle it just yet. My show broadcasts on Twib Media, which is This Week in Blackness, and we talk about race and politics and, you know, pop culture from a Black perspective. And we're doing a big show at Twib this year called We Ain't Watching, which is basically saying, like, if you're not going to represent us or if you're not going to include us in the conversation, we won't participate. And a lot of black media are going to be participating in that and, you know, having fun with it and, you know, doing something different. But like, I'm a big fan of Chris Rock and I want to see how he's going to handle it. Chris Rock has never shied away from controversial statements and, you know, saying what he thought about race and politics. Stacey Dash recently coming out with some crazy comments.
Explain to people. So Stacey Dash is mostly known for her role in Clueless.
Right. Which is one of my favorite movies of all time, to be fair.
But she is a very conservative, Fox News
contributor,
contributor. Mm-hmm. And what is it that she said?
She came out saying that we need to have segregation or integration and that we should eliminate places like BET and the BET Awards and the NAACP Image Awards, which ironically BET responded to with a tweet that's like, well, can we get our check back because you made
she
a lot of appearances on some BET shows.
Yeah,
exactly.
She was on The Game for like 2 years, right? And that's on BET.
Yeah, she had a recurring role on The Game for a while.
But
so
I think her point and. You know, I'm not defending or going against what she's saying, but I think her point was if this is the avenue that you want to take, then we have to be willing to do away with it all. I don't think she was saying I want to kick myself out of a job. And there are a lot of people that believe that the whole issue of race in Hollywood or in any other industry that, you know, are you wanting us as the white population to isolate and only pick you or vote for you or choose you or hire you because you are a minority? Or do you want to be judged on the basis of not being judged on the basis of your skin color, which I sometimes get confused. So honestly, this kind of shows up here with all of these movies too. Like, I should somebody else not get voted as a nominee because they're white? Then, I mean, that's kind of what the alternative is, right?
Sure. Well, I'm so glad that you said that because that's a really, really important point. So when Black people, or not even just Black people, because there are non-Black people who are upset about this as well. And it's not just about Black people, it's about Black and brown people. So, like, there are no Asian nominees, there's no Latino nominees, there's no South American, like, there's no people that are not just, you know, white right. people that are those nominees in those 20 categories. And even for people that say, well, Straight Outta Compton got nominated for a screenwriting award, the writers of the screenplay were white people. But it's not about saying like, oh, we need BET to segregate ourselves. It's to say like, we don't have representation anywhere else. So let's create that space for ourselves. And when I was in college, I had a white classmate come up to me after a class where we were discussing this. And she said, well, what about things like Essence Magazine and BET and, you know, those different places? Aren't those things that are separating us versus things that are putting us all together? Excuse me. And so I said to her, well, at that time, Jennifer Hudson had just been on the cover of Vogue, and she was like the first Black woman to appear on the cover of Vogue, and I think ever at that point. And it was like, how many covers of Vogue have there been over the years? And she was right. like, I don't know, probably hundreds or thousands. I was like, exactly. And we've had one Black woman on the cover. Where should Black women go when they want to see themselves represented as beautiful or as important or as, you know, making an impact? Why not create that space for ourselves? And she was like, oh, okay. I was like, but even just to take race out of it, if you're a knitter and you love knitting and you want to go find out more about knitting, you might go to Cosmo Magazine because there's an article. But like, if there were a knitting magazine, you would probably really want to find out more about it because there you can find out more in-depth information. If we use a different example, if you want to know what happened in the game tonight or last night, you can watch the 11 o'clock news and see the report that comes on at 25 minutes after the hour and see like the quick report. But if you really want to know the in-depth things that happened or you want to get into the conversation and see what people are saying about it, you'll turn to ESPN. And I don't think it's any different when we look at race and the way that people identify because we want to see ourselves represented. If we want to see like the actors that look like us, sometimes you have to turn to the BET Awards or the NAACP Image Awards because you want to see someone that looks like you. And I think white people have never really had to think about that because they've always been represented. Whereas Asian Americans, Black Americans, Latin Americans, and all of the other different people that fall into that diaspora, they want to see themselves represented. And we don't see that when we look at the Oscars. We hardly see that when we look at the Golden Globes or the SAGs or whatever it is. So I think that's why it's so important to have spaces like BET or TV One or, you know, Univision or Telemundo. Those things are important because we need to see ourselves reflected. And white people have never had to really think about that because they've always been represented.
So what do you say, though, to there was a, what is her name, the actress that's in, she, there was a whole conversation, too, about women over a certain age that weren't acknowledged. But mm-hmm. what's the actress's name? She's in the movie 45.
Who was talking about feminism, and then it became a people of color thing?
No, she, yeah, and then she, but she, I can't remember her name, Cheryl, oh my gosh, she's an older woman. She's 69. I printed
see, that. See, after a certain age, you don't even remember her name.
I didn't see the movie. But she was saying, but you know, her comment was that it's you know, it's racism against white people.
Another.
I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous because if we did not have BET and if we did not have Essence and if we did not have all those other, you know, productions and things created so Black people could see other people or Latin people or Asian people could see others that they identify with, this would even be worse.
Yeah, you know? There would be none.
Because
right?
You would never, I mean, look at Dolls, look at, you know, and sexism and racism can have similar parallels.
But this is supposed to be,
but at the same time,
but
yeah,
it's
but
supposed to be subjective.
Fewer people hate women than like that are racist. Like, I just think that we have to, yes, I understand what you're saying. You should be nominated based on merit, based on your performance.
But that's not what the conversation is here.
But there are a lot of people who are not. You can't prove it, unfortunately, but there are a lot of people, whether they're on the Oscar committee or in Hollywood or just in our country, that are not basing things on merit, that if there are two people who have an equal performance, they're going with maybe the one that they like or they know or they feel.
But we don't know that. And so if we always go to it's racism and you're now accusing the entire Academy or Hollywood of being racist, I think that's a slippery slope. And I think that's really dangerous because we've moved completely away from then hiring people based on their talent, their skill, what they draw from. Like Straight Outta Compton,
not my cup of tea. Like, I wasn't interested in going to see that. I'm sure it was a great movie. I'm sure it was, I just, that's not my, so does that make me a racist because I didn't want to see that movie? Like, and that's sort of how it feels as a white person now, that I didn't see half the movie. So I don't really have a place to judge in terms of, well, who I think is better than the next. But I feel like now that's what it's come to, that if I say I didn't watch Concussion, I didn't want to watch Concussion either. Like, does that mean I don't like black people? Like, I don't, I'm confused on what my role is now.
So I think that's a really important point. And, like, first of all, I saw Concussion, thought it was fantastic, and I thought he should have been nominated, but that's a whole different conversation. But, like, we hear this discussion about, like, reverse racism, if you will, where, you know, white people are being treated in a racist way. And I recently saw this speech that I thought was really, really fantastic in explaining why reverse racism isn't a thing. So I can ask you guys the same question. Can you tell me the ways that racism negatively impacts black people? What would those things be?
Jobs, safety, you know, I mean, racism affects them in every single way.
Exactly. So, and like, it's a systematic kind of thing that is like, that affects us when we go to the bank to be able to buy a home or to get a job or to, you know, walk down the street without being shot by a police officer or whatever it is. And so those are the ways that racism negatively impacts black people. But what are the ways that racism negatively impacts white people?
I think that if we're having a candid conversation, I think that it could more so in being hired for positions that maybe whites that are talented and experienced are not being hired because those jobs are being given to people of color or a minority because of
equal opportunity, right?
But even if that were true, how many instances would you say that is like an overwhelming and pervasive problem? Because realistically, we know like the numbers are double for unemployment when we look at black Americans versus white Americans, or, you know, when we look at home mortgage rates, or when we look at, you know, police killings, or when we look at all the different things that, you know, kind of get discussed, like racism is a thing that negatively impacts black people, but kind of socially annoys, you know, non-black people and or non-brown people as well. So it's like racism is a thing that is a system that impacts black people, whereas prejudice kind of goes back toward white people sometimes when we have these discussions. So first of all, it can't really be racist because it's not like a system that is coming against white people. Well, when I hear that it's racist against white people, it's kind of ridiculous to me because I feel like we want to talk about awards going based on merit and, you know, people's great work, but like, look at how many movies were made last year. How many of them featured a black actor or an Asian actor or a Native American actor or a Latino actor in the prominent roles that would even be nominated? Like, the percentage is so small that then you have like three black actors that would even be considered for Oscar nomination. I think this year when we talk about the lead actor in Straight Outta Compton, we look at Will Smith with Concussion, maybe Michael B. Jordan for Creed.
Well, I think there's another one. That kind of goes back to what you're saying, though, that it's not just about the Oscars and it's about Hollywood. Because if the Oscar committee wasn't given more to choose from and more diversity to choose from, then maybe we wouldn't be in this boat. But the only people that are being attacked for it now are the Oscar committees and the Jada Pinkett Smiths of the world and Spike Lee, who hasn't really even been nominated or won awards even from black film festivals, because I looked it up. they're now boycotting. And I'm thinking that it's like you said, when you started at the top of this segment, that it's not really the Oscars' fault. Like, they were kind of left to choose what they were given.
Right.
If they weren't given diversity to begin with, how could they then represent diversity, fair diverse, you know, diversity in their nominees?
Yeah, the Oscars comes under fire every year because the Oscars are kind of the litmus test for excellence in film, right? Like, the Oscars are where we go to say, like, this was the best movie of the year, even though we have a place like the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards and, you know, it's award season. We have a dozen award shows. But when we look at it from the perspective of the Oscars is kind of the gold standard, all puns, you know, recognized but not intended. So when we look at the Oscars as that, we can say, like, this is where we have the gold standards. How many films have been awarded Best Picture that, you know, featured a prominent person of color? You know, not many. How many films featuring a black cast or a Latino cast or, you know, whatever ethnicity we want to plug in there have really been honored by the Oscars? Not many. When we look at the voting board at the Oscars, they are 94 or 93% white and 70-something percent male. So, like, there's a disproportionate number of people that are in there voting when it comes to like who's going to be nominated, who's going to win. And so like we can't ignore that when we look at those numbers, because 70% male, like how is that okay? When we look at women, we always talk about women as a minority, but women are actually a majority. There are more women in America than there are men. So like how is that proportionate when we look at 70% men and 30% women? That's not proportionate. How do we look at that when we see 93 or 94% white Academy voters, when we know that, you know, America is 12 to 13% black, another 15 or so percent Latino, and then Asian and all those other things? Like, that just doesn't make sense. And so when we see the media that's reflected back at us, it's not representative of the audience. And that's the real problem. We even talk about that when we look at policing and how, like, you know, the police stations don't necessarily represent the communities in which they serve. Like, there are overwhelmingly white police forces in, you know, overwhelmingly black communities, and how that has an impact on the way that we engage the police. We being Americans, not black people, but like the way that we engage the police is a part of that, because we don't see police officers that look like us. There's a bias that comes in. And so it's the same thing when we look at the way that things are just disproportionate in the academy, in policing, in Congress, and all of those different spaces. Like, we have to do a better job of having better representation to be able to have a fairer conversation.
So last year, just going back to the academy for a second. So they have a I forget her name, Cheryl something or other Jones, or what's her name?
Cheryl Isaacs Boone, or Boone Isaacs.
Yeah, I don't know where I got Jones. Cheryl Isaacs Boone. So do you know how long she's been the president of the Academy?
I believe this is her first full year. I want to say that the term is like 2 years or something like that. Okay, but don't quote me on that.
That's okay. So what is her, I read somewhere, that they added like over 300 new members to the Academy last year, and many of which were high profile black actors and directors, and, you know, and the initiative was to be more sensitive to women and minorities. And the article was saying that wasn't enough to tip the scales. So mm-hmm. how do you, if you were in Cheryl's position, what would you encourage her to do, or what would you encourage the Academy to do and the committees to do? Like, what's the goal?
I feel like it's a really big thing to set on her shoulders, right? So she's the president of the board of the Academy. She's not the president of a studio or a production company or a space that can make a huge difference as far as films are concerned. She can only really impact the Academy. And, you know, a lot of people fall underneath the Academy, and that's fantastic. But, like, we need to be looking at the executives at Sony and Paramount and, you know, Universal and all of the different spaces that are choosing people to go into these films, or choosing the films that are getting made. Mm-hmm. This is probably going to piss someone off, but that's okay. But like, I was looking at a film trailer the other day, and I won't say what the film is, but I was looking at it, and I hear black people say this all the time. And I said to myself, I was like, white people can get any film made. Like, there are some silly films out there that I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like, you mean to tell me like this is something that somebody spent $30 million to make this silly film?
I need to know what film it is. You got to fess up.
I feel bad. Okay, it's Dirty Grandpa with Zac Efron. And I was just like, seriously? Like, this is what we spent all this money and press on? Like, seriously? Come on.
The Wayans brothers.
Well, exactly. No, but Kim, that's a perfect example. So, like, those films had to get made with money that, like, they had to fight for.
Yeah.
But movies like Dirty Grandpa, like, oh, we got Zac Efron and what's his name? Not Robert Duvall, but Robert De Niro. Yes,
I love that you're like, what's that? He's a newcomer, Robert.
He's an up and coming guy. I don't know.
I kept wanting to say Robert Duvall, but Robert De Niro. Like, oh, we got the two of them. Sure, we'll give that money. But you know, like, but the Wayans brothers have been around for decades, and like, how much money went into making 50 Shades of Black, which is a parody film? But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it looks like a silly film, and I probably won't see it. But it looks funny. But how about like important films that feature black people, or important films that feature, you know, minorities, or important films that feature women, like, or gay people, or whatever it is? Like, it's not just about black people, but this is the rubric that we're using to discuss it. But I mean, whenever I look at films like, you know, Dirty Grandpa, I'm like, white men can get anything made, or white people can get anything made, because like there are so many people that look like them when they're in those pitch meetings with an executive or with a, you know,
what do you think about TV? I mean, I feel that TV is doing a much better job, not only with minorities, but, sure, you know, gay leads and, you know, just making characters
more relatable.
More, but it's not about the color or the sexuality or the, you know, the religion. Like, it's like I feel like there's a lot more diversity.
Sure.
In just creating really good characters who look different from each other.
Yeah, well, when we look at television, you know, we talk about this is kind of the second golden age of television. Like, television has really, really exploded in the last few years with so many cable networks and streaming services. And there's a lot more inventory if we just look at it from a numbers game, right? There's a lot more television shows to watch than there are films in theaters.
Right.
And so we are certainly in a better place than we've ever been. But like, the fact that we can name, you know, the black shows or the Asian shows on one or two hands still indicates like we have some growth to make, but we're certainly in a better position than we've ever been.
I mean,
exactly.
We're better than we were. So just a quick update, you know, you're listening to Broadcast with Kim Golden and Jackie McDougal. We're talking to Jarrett Hill, podcaster, on-air talent, interior designer, fabulous overall human being.
Thank you.
I mean, I just think that Shonda Rhimes has, like, you know, changed the face, so to speak, of primetime. And also, you know, my husband and I are obsessed with Jane the Virgin. Like, I didn't even know it existed. I mean, I knew it existed, but it the marketing at least felt a little more like ABC Family, which is now Freeform because my husband works there.
Don't even get me started on that, but that's a different conversation.
but it felt very young and it, you know, in some ways it is, but it's a fun little show, you know, and I love that, you know, it's not like Latino, we have to, they're just, you know, people.
And here's what's so naive to me, for me, and I'm just going to out myself. I don't pay one iota of attention to that when I'm watching television. I don't watch and go, all right, so there's four black people, one gay person.
That's
and
because
a lesbian.
You're white.
No, it's because I'm not.
I'm
straight. No, I don't believe that. I honestly believe it's because I just watch. It's either going to tug at my heartstrings. It's either going to draw me in because the storyline's
good. You wouldn't notice, though, if it was a show and it was five men and that was it and you never saw a woman?
I don't know that I would. And maybe that's being insensitive or naive, but I really just, I don't pay that much attention because if the story's good, I'm not focused on how many people that are white, black. I just don't. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Kim, I think that's a good point. So Jackie kind of touched it right there. Like, as a white person, you've never had to, right? So like, I had a white boyfriend that I dated over the summer, and we went into a restaurant, and I said to him, like, the restaurant was packed. And I said to him, I was like, wow, there's one other black person in here. And he said to me, like, why are you even paying attention to that? Like, I would have never even noticed that. And I was like, I said to him, I was like, if you went into a restaurant and there were all black people and there was one white person across the room, you wouldn't notice that? And like, there was a long pause. And he said, huh, oh, okay. And like, I'm a huge fan of Sex and the City. And there was a marathon on the other day. I probably watched it longer than I'll admit. But I was watching the show, and it's so mind-boggling to me, like, how we can go six seasons of a show, so many characters come in and out, but it's so hard to find a person of color
in
New York City. Like, I mean...
No, Blair Underwood was Cynthia Nixon's character, her boyfriend. Kim, he was a sports doctor for the Knicks. I watched that whole episode. He was
but
hot.
Kim, you're touching on my point, though. The fact that you can name the one black person... is the point.
Just because he was hot, and I remember.
Well, right. I mean, I remember that conversation I had in the hallway. I was like, I'm all about Blair Underwood right now, yeah, right? Yeah. But there
We're
was
all
one
about black character. Blair Underwood.
We look at Friends, and like Aisha Tyler was the only black character to ever come onto that show, and it was like in the last couple of seasons or something, and she was there for a season. Mm-hmm. So like we are definitely in a better place than we've been, and black people, you know, are always talking about how we're excited about Scandal or how to get away with murder.
You know, Latinos are very much
certainly
underrepresented.
Certainly, and I mean Asians are even less represented on television. But like,
I have a question about that, because do you feel like Asians are as well, yes, they're underrepresented, but I don't necessarily... Do you feel that they face the same racism as other races or nationalities?
Ooh, Jackie, you're trying to get me in trouble. Okay, so like, we always have this discussion within, and
I mean, I really want to be educated. I have an, as you know, I have an Asian daughter and who's adopted from Taiwan, and I very much respect
was adorable
her culture. Oh, she's awesome, but respect her culture and her identity and where she. But you know, I'm a redheaded, freckle-faced white girl, so like, mm-hmm. I want to be open and aware, and you know. Just understand. I mean, I can't ever possibly know what it's like, but at least I can have some compassion and some, you know, empathy.
Well, it's hard. I can't obviously speak for the Asian community, but like, if we talk about representation in media, like, how many shows have an Asian cast or even an Asian lead? Like, this year, Priyanka Chopra is the lead in a new show on ABC. And I'm trying to speak slowly so I can come up. Quantico is the name of the show. Quantico. Yeah. She's Indian and she's stunning and that show is fantastic. But like the fact that her being on that show was news is part of the headline, right? Or, and I use the same example if we look back at politics. When a person like Barack Obama can win the presidency and the headline does not involve him being black, then we have moved away from, we're in a post-racial America. Or when Priyanka Chopra can be, you know, the lead on a show like Quantico and her being Indian American is not a part of the headline, then we are, you know, in a post-racial society. And so when we get to a day where we can look at the Oscars and, you know, everyone can be nominated and that not be a story, we can just acknowledge like, oh, wow, all of these fantastic actors who are of all different ethnic backgrounds are involved here. That's when we are past this, when we can see two gay people in a commercial and it not become, you know, a firestorm, or we can see a black woman and a white woman in a Cheerios commercial with a mixed race little girl and it doesn't start up something. That's when we're in a post-racial era. But like when we look at Asian Americans, like, they're way underrepresented on television, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's Fresh Off the Boat, mm-hmm. which is on ABC, and there's Quantico with Priyanka Chopra, and there's a handful of other shows, but like, Asian Americans are so underrepresented. There's so little space for them on television to really be themselves. I don't even really see a network that is really geared toward Asian Americans, so it's got to be really difficult to be Asian in this country from that perspective.
Two things, like, do you really think there will ever be a post-racial America?
Certainly not. And I don't think, when I was dating my boyfriend over the summer, he said to me, like, well, you know, I don't even think about race. Like, I don't even see color. And I hear a lot of white people say that. And I think what they're trying to say is, I am not prejudiced or racist. But when I hear you say to me, I don't see color, that doesn't warm my heart or make me feel better. That makes me say, why don't you see me as who I am? So, like, if a man
came to the person that says, I don't see color, I am seeing you for who you are. You're Jarrett to me. And
right.
It doesn't mean that I'm insensitive to the fact that there are people in this country that are incredibly racist and that are prejudiced and do horrible things to people of minorities that are minority. But I personally, I go back to what I said. I don't know if it makes me naive or what it is, but I really just, you're who you are. I'm going to like you one way or the other based on who you are as a human, not because of the color of your skin or because of your religion or because you're a female or male. Like,
sure.
I don't know. That's actually, that works
but
for
I
me.
Think, but
and
I think
I don't,
by doing that, though, you're not recognizing. I'm not saying you're wrong because you need to, like, but I feel like you're not recognizing a person's struggles or identification when you
but
just
I'm
don't
assuming
see
that someone has struggles based on the color of their skin, and not everybody does. And why should I then paint this?
You just said you assume someone has struggles, so you do see color.
But I'm being told that I should be assuming that someone has struggles because they're black and white. But you don't look at me and assume I've had any kind of trouble or any.
I do actually.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is,
sorry, Jared, I had to.
I guess what I'm saying is which way is the best way to do this? Right? Like, if I'm trying to...
Well, it's just like politics. It's one side or the other, and nobody's in the middle. No. I think it's like we have to be able to understand and have compassion and empathy for people who look a different way or who were brought up a different way. Or, you know, I was at the Children's Hospital yesterday with my son, and there's a couple who walked into the elevator, you know, clearly Muslim. She was all, you know, her face was covered, her head was... They had a child in the stroller who was obviously sick, and I just, you know... I wonder how many people like turn away or won't get on the elevator or, you know, and I just gave them a smile and just, you know, said, good morning or whatever it was. Like,
yeah,
I just,
but why wouldn't you do that to the woman that walked on, just a random woman that walked on? Why wouldn't you assume, God, you know, maybe she was attacked yesterday.
Because
maybe she's at the hospital today.
Well, I try to be, but this particular couple, I can just imagine walking around, you know, not only are you in Children's Hospital with a child who's sick, but, you know, walking around in this world that we live in, we can pretend that people aren't giving them looks or saying things to them or whatever despicable, you know, comments or actions they have toward them. I went out of my way a little bit extra to make sure that they knew that they were loved and accepted. And maybe I'm very kumbaya at the moment, but you know.
I guess I just sort of feel like I extend that, and I don't mean to diminish what you did, but like that courtesy or that compassion to all people, because I never know where people's experiences are lead them to.
Well, then you're a nicer human being than
I am. No, it's not about nicer. I don't know how to explain it, because now I feel like I'm not being sensitive enough to the fact that people are of a minority, and I'm trying to understand.
Well, Kim, I think that's really important. So like what you're saying is like, I try to treat everyone the same and try to be inclusive. And that's very important. I think part of it is, though, and Black people talk about this amongst ourselves all the time, is like, you as a white female will never be able to understand what it's like to be a Black man the same way that I will never be able to understand what it's like to be a white woman. But like, you will never know the feeling of walking down the street or walking into an elevator, for use the same analogy, and there's a white woman on the elevator and like she clutches her purse a little bit closer, or you walk by someone's car and they lock their door, or they cross the street, or whatever it is. Like, you won't know what that feels like because you won't have that experience. And even if you did have that experience, you don't have it with all of the baggage that comes along before it. Like, I am a 6'3", relatively fit, let's not talk about the gym, Black man who, you know, I'm a large person, and I'm Black, and I'm male. Like, I am intimidating to some people when I walk into a space just because of those things. And then I start talking, and they're like, you like the Kardashians? Get out of here. But it's a situation where, like, I bring that into a space, and all of the things that people think about a tall, Black, fit man when you walk into the room, I can't defeat that regardless, right? And so when you were talking earlier, you were saying, like, I treat everyone the same and I don't see color. You didn't say that, but you were discussing that phrase. I appreciate that sentiment, but I also want to challenge the thinking. So, like, I appreciate you treating me the same way that you treat everyone else and wanting to be inclusive, but I want you to see me as a Black man. I want you to see me as male. I want you to see me as gay. I want you to see me as a creative. I want you to see me as all of the things that I am. And we talk about that, the idea that America is a melting pot, but I've always really liked the idea of it being a tossed salad where all of the different components within the salad are really important. You want to taste the carrot. You want to taste the tomato. You want to taste the cheese. You want to taste the dressing. You want to taste the lettuce. You want to taste all those different pieces, as opposed to melting them all together into the same thing, because we're not, right? Right, we're all different, and we all come to this conversation as individuals who bring our own separate and special things to that space.
Well, right. We have less than a minute left, and the conversation is going wild on Twitter, which I like. But here's the other thing, Jarrett, is that I think a lot of white people, and this is what I'm reading now on Twitter, feel that they're automatically assumed to be racist. And so, like, even for Kim and her background and her brother's trial and, you know, fighting a murderer was, you know, what her family's goal and mission is, it was and is and will always be. But because he is Black, her family is treated a certain way, like they are racist and they are horrible. And, you know, that's also very difficult.
Sure.
We're not comparing apples to apples here, you know, but
sure.
It's, you know, it's such a great conversation. And we're so grateful that you came on and had this conversation with us. We have to have you on again, but we're running out of time.
No worries. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Jarrett Hill, where can people find you?
Find me everywhere on social media at Jarrett Hill, 2 R's, 2 T's, Hill. You know,
well. Right.
Exactly.
Hi, Jarrett. Thanks, we love you.
Thank you. Love you guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, he's the best. And, you know, we got to go. I can't believe we have to go. But one thing I want to end with.
Go kick ISIS ass!
Woo! Thanks for listening to Broadcast. We will see you next week.
Find us at broadcast.com
and on Facebook, Broadcast, and Broadcast Show on Twitter. Thanks. Have a great week.
Bye.